Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, February 4th, 2019. We are live today. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
You know, I just want to report this. You know, Friday I took off. I didn't take off. We were so busy here at the office that we just... I just didn't have time to, there was just too much going on, so I had decided that we would do a replay. But one of the biggest news stories of last week, and actually it happened on Saturday, it was Punxsutawney Phil. He didn't see a shadow, which means it's an early spring. And so that's the best news I think anyone in this country can hear, that if you believe Punxsutawney Phil out of Pennsylvania, he didn't see a shadow. So he's predicting an early spring, and I believe it because this week we're supposed to be close to 65. A couple of days we're in the 60s, and I think one is as high as 65, and it's the first week of February. So he might be right this year, so we'll just have to see how it is.
Phil doesn't lie, Melody.
Phil doesn't.
He may be wrong 50% of the time, but he always tells the truth.
Well, this time he's going to be right, so maybe we can move up his percentage of predictions accuracy a little bit this year. So fingers crossed. Good news, ladies and gentlemen. And gold today, well, we can't extend the good news to gold. It had a little pressure today, and it's okay. It's Monday, down $4.30 at $1,313. Silver was down 2 cents at $1,500. Wouldn't you wish? At $15.95. Platinum was down $2 at $824. Palladium is the only precious metal that was higher. It was up 13 at $1,373. USDX today was up 24 cents at 95.84. Crude oil was down 54 cents at 54.72. And let's see, the paper market today. Let's get to, I lost my numbers as I was looking up Phil. I wanted to see what Phil had to say this weekend. So you had the Dow, it reversed itself, or, you know, it was down. It was barely moving all day, but something must have happened here in the last hour of trade. The Dow was up 175 points, 25,239. The NASDAQ was up 83, 7,347. And the S&P was up 18, 2,724. 10-year yield, 2.72%, up 0.03. Everything was pretty quiet overnight. And, you know, it seems like it's a typical day of trade for Monday, you know, and markets really don't know which direction they're going into. And so it's, and I really haven't seen any earth-shattering news today. I think everybody is waiting for tomorrow, which is the Trump speech and to Congress. And I think everybody is looking on that. What we wanted to talk about when we didn't have a chance to on Friday is the job report. We're just going to bring you our view on that. And they showed that the non-farm payrolls surged by 304,000. So, and that was even despite the partial government shutdown, and that was the longest in history. We know that. And the unemployment rate ticked higher to 4%. And the federal workers generally were counted as employed during that period. That was much higher than what everyone had expected. And I had hoped, I didn't keep the details on it, but I think there was a lot of details that were very fuzzy in that report other than the 304,000 and the revisions if I recall, some of the revisions to the month before, to December, were substantial. And I'll see if I can't find those here in just a little bit and bring that to you. So those were the numbers that I had wanted to talk about when we talked about the January job growth. And there's a lot of discrepancies in that. And I wouldn't doubt come next month they're going to revise this down much lower too. So, but nobody pays attention to those details, you know, when people are talking about and so forth, and that's part of the reality of it. So, we also have new orders for U.S. made goods that unexpectedly fell in November, amid sharp declines in demand for machinery and electric equipment. So again, it's suggesting a slowdown in manufacturing as we saw 2018 end. Factory good orders fell 0.6%, the Commerce Department reported this morning. Everyone was anticipating that they would rise, but they didn't. And some manufacturers continue to complain that tariffs on steel imports were pushing up prices of raw materials.
Yeah, November orders for machinery tumbled nearly 2% after gaining 0.2 in October. There were large declines in orders for industrial and metalworking machinery, as well as ventilation, heating, air conditioning, and refrigeration equipment. Now, orders for electrical equipment, plus appliances and components, dropped 1.1%. That was after rising 1% in October. But orders for transportation equipment rebounded 3% after plunging 12.4% in October. Orders for civilian aircraft and parts rose about 7% in November. Motor vehicles and parts edged up about 1/10. The Commerce Department also said November orders for non-defense capital goods, excluding aircraft, which are seen as a measure of business spending plans on equipment, dropped 0.6%, and that's consistent with a lot of other news that we're hearing in the small business area, which we'll talk about later on in the program. Melody.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and again, ladies and gentlemen, as much as I don't believe in the corporate stock buybacks, I mean, this is all a political ploy coming from the Democrats, from Schumer and from Bernie, where they have proposed a bill to stop corporations from repurchasing their shares until they first invest in workers and communities through better pay and benefits. You know, you can't. You know, so with this new plan by Schumer and Sanders, highly unlikely that it's going to get through the GOP-controlled Senate and earn any support from the other side. So we're not quite sure. You know, again, this is just another election ploy that's going to come and distort the real problem. The real problem is the distortion of Wall Street and stock markets when you have these multinational corporations buying back their shares. That's the problem. But to use it and to, I don't believe we should tell corporations that they need to invest in their workers and communities with better pay and benefits. No, I don't agree with, and that's part of their bill.
Well, we see, though, what doing nothing has done in that respect, too. Corporations bought back $1.1 trillion their own stocks last year. You know, that was enabled by the Republican tax cuts passed in December of 17. So, you know, I don't, you know, Schumer and Sanders say the share repurchases have not helped workers. The statistics are bearing that out to a large extent. There are inconsistencies in that, but the in terms of you know, equality, the other issue that they're talking about is that stock buybacks don't benefit the majority of Americans, and that's just economics. Stockholders tend to be wealthier. So my observation is that at least initially, through the after the first year of the tax plan, not doing anything is not as good as doing something, particularly if you know, corporations aren't going to take care of things themselves.
But that doesn't solve any of the problems. You know, I mean, you
well,
look
sure
at
it does.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't, because that, I mean, you know, that this, but to go after their money, I mean, we all know what Schumer and Sanders want to do. They want to tax them, you know, to pay for, and this is all a political ploy. It's not going to get done anyway. So it's, if they really wanted to make things fair, how about a flat tax? How about a flat tax for every single citizen in this country?
So a person making $25,000 a year is taxed at the same rate as someone who's making $25 million? Is that what we're saying?
Flat rate for everybody. Flat rate for everybody. To me, that's always been the fairest.
It's so, been the most regressive.
It's the fairest.
In my humble opinion.
Well, you know, if you want to get, to taxes, I mean, it's, you just can't go after the wealthy just to pay for, benefits for everybody else. I mean, you just can't do that, And I get that these multinational corporations, they should give back to their communities and so forth and whatnot. But you know what? This is the problem with multinational. We've lost any type of commitments to this country and so forth when we went global. So here's your global world, ladies and gentlemen. And there's no loyalty to the United States. There's no, Oil prices today fell after disappointing U.S. factory data sparked some fresh concerns about a slowdown in the global economy. You had OPEC-led supply cuts and U.S. sanctions against Venezuela sort of brightened the supply outlook. Brent crude futures lost 68 cents, or 1.1% to 62.07 barrel by lunchtime today, and the U.S. West Texas Intermediate crude futures fell $1.16. I can't read today, ladies and gentlemen, or 2.1% to $54.10 a barrel.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm done.
I'm just going to say prices also dipped after data showed U.S. crude inventories at Cushing, Oklahoma, which is the delivery point for U.S. crude futures, rose by more than 943,000 barrels in the week that ended February 1st. Prices had been buoyed by a new round of supply cuts from OPEC and its allies that began in January. Russia has been in full compliance, reportedly, with its pledge to gradually cut its oil production, which decreased by 47,000 barrels per day in January from October. The impact of OPEC supply curbs has been boosted by U.S. sanctions on Venezuelan state-owned oil firm PDVSA. We'll be talking about Venezuela in a little bit as well, particularly as it relates to gold.
Yeah, really. We all know that supposedly he's trying to sell his gold. You heard the stories of Russia backing up their ships to... load or their airplanes to load on their gold. And it's interesting to see how gold is becoming indispensable to Maduro as he's trying to hold on to his power in Venezuela. And I guess there was you see these political tensions, and this weekend there were thousands of the anti-government protesters took to the streets of the capital city over the weekend to demonstrate against Maduro. And in recent weeks, we've seen this growing number of international governments have come out in support of Guaido, condemning Maduro for that election he held last year.
Yeah, it's getting ugly down there. And, for a country known to have the largest oil reserves in the world, gold, of all things, is of absolute importance to Maduro's administration. That's according to more than one analysts and observers. One of them, Diego Moya Ocampos, says it's important for three reasons. Gold, that is. First, gold can act as fresh cash to help Maduro survive in office. Second, it can help provide security or military protection, that is, payment of particularly of bribes to generals and other senior military officials. And third, it can help them to live, hide, and maybe even prepare a comeback, whether they go in, he goes into exile and some of his henchmen. In any event, with hyperinflation accelerating towards 1,400,000%, you know, mounting U.S. sanctions and collapsing oil production, Maduro started selling off gold about a year ago. Two-thirds of Venezuela's foreign exchange reserves at its central bank is thought to be held in gold, and Maduro apparently increasingly determined to free up more cash.
I did see where there was one general, I believe, that is beginning to fall away from Maduro. I don't, it was a headline I read. I don't know if it was accurate or not, but so we'll see if that's, you know, if the generals are beginning to, you know, because leave his side. But on Friday, Abu Dhabi investment firm Noor Capital said it bought 3 metric tons of gold from Venezuela's central bank. That prompted Senator Rubio to warn the United Arab Emirates-based company. The BBC reported on Saturday that Turkey was also facing renewed pressure to stop buying gold from Venezuela. And of course, Turkey is one of the few countries alongside China and Russia to have publicly come out in support of Maduro. Also, it turns out that some of Venezuela's gold reserves is held by the Bank of England. And I guess we know, we've heard or we read that the United States was, you know, kind of pressuring the Bank of England not to give any of Venezuela's gold back. But at the start of 2018, Venezuela's central bank reportedly held 150 tons of gold, but by number, that holdings had fell to 132 tons, and that's a 75-year low.
Oh, so, you know, moving back to the States, you know, after a banner year in 2018, many small businesses are becoming more cautious about their investment and hiring plans. You know, some are responding to early signs of slowing sales, while others still fear that, you know, tariffs are going to come into play if the U.S. and China can't work out their differences. Now, economic confidence among small firms, which edged downward for much of last year, in January reached its lowest level since the president's election in November 2016. That's according to a survey conducted for the Wall Street Journal. Just 14% of firms expect the economy to improve this year, while 36% expect it to get worse.
And for the first time since the 2016 election, there were small firms were more pessimistic about their own financial prospects than they were a year earlier. And that includes plans for hiring and investment. Richard Curtin, University of Michigan, says we could be at a turning point. Recessions are not made of one firm collapsing, but of many firms cutting back in marginal ways. And we're out of time. We're heading into the first segment commercials. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I think I drank too much coffee today. I don't know why. I just drank too much coffee in the anticipation of spring coming. I guess it's all too much for me. But it's been a hectic It's been hectic. People are out there buying gold and silver. And ladies and gentlemen, we got some great prices here for you. Dave, I watched a video today. Before we head on, we're going to talk about how the U.S. mint sales, silver sales jumped in January. But I watched a video. There was some sort of conference this weekend. I'm sure it was up in Canada. I'm not sure. And I'm not going to mention the gentleman's name or so forth. And, you know, to some degree, he does a really good job in helping people understand, you know, what's coming down the pike, the dollar, what money is, and so forth. So kudos to him for doing that. However, when it comes to their investment advice, when it comes to gold and silver, I cannot disagree. I mean, it's just bizarre. You know, they use the funny thing, Dave, is they use the collapse of our system, of inflation and everything else that pushes people to gold, to where you should really take physical delivery of it. And then what they offer you is a small amount of physical, 5 or 10% into physical. And, you know, we sell gold bullion coins if that's the case and that's your one, but if that's what you want. But how about coming into my fund, my gold fund?
Beware, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I mean, come on. And I was literally shocked to hear this person actually support jewelry. And I've had a couple people say to me lately, well, what about jewelry? You got to be insane. And I hear, well, you know, you'll never pay over 20%. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Why would you pay 20% for your gold when you can get it for a whole lot less? I don't understand. What do you, and this person showed beautiful gold cufflinks, 24 karat gold cufflinks. Do you know how beat up they would be after probably a day's worth of wear? Beating it on your desk or, you know, whatever you might be doing, it's so soft. You'd never be able to protect it. And I can remember back in the 90s, Dave, they used to try and sell gold chains. Oh, if you need some gold, you know, just because this is what they did, I guess, during when they were there in Vietnam and the war and so forth and whatnot. They used that as an example where you could just open up a link and use that link to barter and so forth. I guess the same idea is coming to the 24 karat jewelry. And that's just like, it doesn't even make sense, ladies and gentlemen. You know? And I just can't believe, no wonder people are confused out there. And it just amazes me that it's so hard for people to work and save, and yet they get caught up into these sensational pitches on either getting into these gold funds, or you get gold money online, You deal in grams, and you go all over the page when the most simple, logical, safest thing that you can do is buy your metal and take physical delivery of it, period. You know, I heard the pitch about debit cards backed by gold, and I'm thinking to myself, yet the same people who go into, see, the people who get this stuff, they really don't believe that there's going to be a money reset. They use the pitch to sell you, but really the big bucks, they don't believe that's going to happen. You know, they don't believe that's going to happen. They think they're protected. You know, there's 15 storage vaults around the world. Really? Really, ladies and gentlemen? So think twice before you spend your hard-earned money. Give Discount Gold and Silver. Give me a call. And I'll tell you if it's a good deal or if it isn't a good deal. I mean, if you have $5 million and you've got two of it in physical and you want to go something and do something and store money, and yeah, that's okay. But most of you don't. And those are the ones that they really go after you, because a lot of you have a lot of money together and you don't have the money to go after with attorneys to sue people and so forth. So be careful out there, ladies and gentlemen. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. So I watched that video today and it just kind of got my ire up a little bit. And it's just like, really? Are you kidding me? And then because I remember it was these same people with Bob Chapman. I made a comment on the radio about storing your metals overseas, and I got a phone call the next day and says, you better not save those things if you don't want a lawsuit. So, you know, they don't want us to talk about these programs. And are they legitimate? Yeah, they're legitimate. But are they suitable for you? That's the question. So, and U.S. Mint Silver Eagle sales, that jumped in February. We had, in the past 2 months, gold and silver prices have gained 8%, 4% respectively. Last Thursday and again on Friday, gold breached the 1320 level. We saw silver top $16 both days. Yes, we've had pressure today. January sales of Silver Eagles fell to a low last year at 3.2 million ounces, down from 5.1 million ounces in 2017, and they picked up, surpassing 4 million ounces. And according to the U.S. Mint's most recent update, Silver Eagle sales totaled a little over 4 million versus a little over 3 million last year. So based on those numbers, the Silver Eagle sales increased 25% more than the same month the previous year. So while it is true that overall Silver Eagle sales have been much lower than the peak of 47 million set in 2015, it's still nice to see an uptick in this demand. And I think we're going to continue to see it throughout 2019. What about the Gold Eagles, Dave?
Well, Gold Eagles, the sales for January rose by more than 10% to 64,500 ounces. Here are the total Silver Eagle sales for the past 5 years. We'll just go from 15.7 million last year to roughly 18 million in 2017, 37,700,000 in 2016, and 47 million in 2015, a little over 44 million in 2014. Now, those figures reflect that Silver Eagle sales in 2018 were 67% less than the peak in 2015. However, sales are still much stronger than before the 2008 financial crisis. In 2007, annual Silver Eagle sales were a little less than 10 million ounces. So, you know, if the economy and markets continue to deteriorate this year, that is the paper markets, we could easily see much stronger Silver Eagle sales than the 15.7 million last year, which, if you look at it compared to 2007, it's over 50% higher. Pay attention to this, ladies and gentlemen. We'll keep you abreast of any changes as we go throughout this year.
And, you know, gold is going to go higher, in my opinion. than where we've been before. It's going to pass it. And I'm going to quote Duffy, Chicago Merkin, the CME, CEO, chairman. Was it a year ago? He said gold should be trading at $5,000 or $6,000, considering what is going on here in this country and around the world. And even though our economy did improve over the last year, we still got some major geopolitical issues going on and some very telling times facing this country financially. Gold was trading around $1,325 per ounce. So you're looking at about $125 gain since early October or October of 2018. The nearly four-month surge was not expected even 6 months ago, but pundits are now eyeing the 2018 high around 1360. We're going to be much higher than that at the end of the year. I mean, there's so much going on in the next couple of months that it defies logic that the gold shouldn't be over $1,400 by the end of March. March is a key month. I'll agree to that. And I think once it breaks through those levels, it's only going to wake up people even more so, because they see the number of debt. They hear about the debt, and they're concerned about the debt.
Well, a number of factors are playing into that and will continue to as this year goes on. And each one individually has the potential to drive gold much higher, much less the effects of these combined factors. One, interest rates. We can talk about forever. The Fed announced no change to interest rates and has adjusted its tone to adopt a more measured approach the rest of this year. We know they raised rates four times in 2018, and analysts largely thought there'd be three more moves upwards this year and another one next year. Now the market's of the mind that we might not see any increases this year. In fact, there are a few that are saying we might actually see a cut in rates. So what happened? Well, the ongoing trade dispute between China and the U.S. starting to have an impact on both economies. China's growth has slowed to a pace not seen in three decades. You know, this risks hitting the global economy, and certainly is a factor in perceptions of economists and business owners through these surveys that we mentioned today and last week. And the Fed's concerned it might push the U.S. into a recession, if it raises rates much farther from their current level. Near-term momentum in gold could increase if China and U.S. can't hammer out a deal soon. And particularly if they subsequently impose additional tariffs, which is set to occur, if they can't work out their differences by March. And in Europe, of course, the UK is scheduled to leave the EU at the end of March, and a no-deal Brexit is looking more and more likely.
Well, you said that China's growth slowed to a pace not seen in nearly 30 years. So that can't be from every other country in the world except the United States. I mean, considering, aren't we their biggest trading partner?
Sure we have. But I think at the rate of construction, for example, has slowed down substantially, even though there are parts of China that we read about are still on the cusp of a boom. And some say, their Belt and Road Initiative is really the one thing that's going to keep their economy rolling for the next 5 years. I mean, we will see. It's the issue is larger than trade. Otherwise, you'd be scratching your head and wondering, well, how is it that much lower? I think it's largely the construction boom of the past.
That's so it's all internal. Down. It's all internal.
Largely. Okay. Largely. I don't think all, but largely.
Okay. All right. So if we're looking at Brexit, if there is a hard landing in Brexit and gold, we could see another wave of new buying with gold. Recent data just came out showing strong gold buying from the central banks in 2018. That was led by Russia as it dumps U.S. treasuries and put the funds in gold. In fact, countries bought more gold in 2018 than in any year since 1971. We talked about this last week. I'm not sure if I have that in the newsletter today or not. I think I added a little bit in there about this because it's a good reminder, ladies
good
and
perspective.
Gentlemen. Absolutely, and it's something that shouldn't be talked about once. We should talk about it more often and remind you just the central banks are doing it. Why are you not? You know, we need to be in the same league as the central banks. Be your own central banker. So, you know, we're easily going to see another 50% surge in gold. But we are going to have some sort of a financial shock or some sort of a geopolitical crisis. I could name a dozen financial shocks or geopolitical crises we're about to face. Both situations would have been off the radar a year ago, but things have changed, and money is starting to seek out safety. And we're going to see this trickle into gold, and it's going to become a flood. So we're going to see a significant rally and a run back to 1900 plus. So it's a great time to be buying now. I hear people all the time, oh, it's over 1300, it's too high. Ladies and gentlemen, if you believe that we're going to have some sort of a reset, I think these prices at 1300 is dirt cheap. So don't you, it's the proper way of looking at things. And the reality of it is the prices for gold and silver have never been better.
Well, in a report published late last week, Mike McGlone, who's a senior commodity strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence, said he expects to see higher gold prices as rising government debt looks unstoppable. Yeah. You know, he said gold set to resume the almost two-decade-long bull market on the back of the increasing U.S. budget deficit and peaking dollar. McGlone's comments came after gold prices pushed to a fresh eight-month high last week as investors continued to digest the latest Fed decision and comments from Jerome Powell. You know, although the Fed remains optimistic on economic growth, much more so than we do, you know, its open market committee said it would halt its monetary policy tightening. So that in and of itself was significant. I mean, they could have said pause, but, you know, now they're talking about halting. We shall see. I've been of the mindset that the Fed has such a hard time getting out of its own way. So I'm not going to be surprised if just the slightest threat of inflation or higher than expected growth won't push them back into a rate-raising frame of mind pretty quickly.
Well, you know, Powell also said that the Fed is expecting slower growth in 2019. I think everyone is sort of anticipating that also. And I can't believe how fast this hour goes by, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back right after this short break. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Heading into the break, I was talking about how Powell is expecting Jerome Powell of the Fed is expecting slower growth in 2019 compared to last year. Earlier, the Congressional Budget Office said that the U.S. is expected to increase its debt by $12 trillion between 2020 and 2019. And the increase in debt is the result of more spending and slower economic growth. And along with the CBO, Powell continues to warn that the long term, the government will be forced to spend money on just servicing its growing debt instead of putting that money where it is needed most. You know, these guys crack me up, Dave. I mean, we talked about, you know, when you service the debt, that money doesn't go into anything, the infrastructure of this country. And,
goes into a black hole.
Goes into a black hole. Yep. Yeah.
Doesn't do anybody any good. And along the same vein that we've been talking about, German Central Bank President Jens Weidmann has called on the European Central Bank to press ahead with plans to phase out ultra-low interest rates. Weidmann cautioned that the ECB currently has little room to deal with any new economic turndown. Where have we heard that one before? You know, the warning from Germany's top central banker stands at odds with recent comments by ECB Prez Mario Draghi, who's indicated that the ECB is ready to unleash fresh stimulus measures to support Europe's softening economy. You know, the ECB moved only last month to phase out its landmark stimulus policy, a €2.5 trillion bond buying program. But as we know, the economic outlook has darkened considerably since then, with Italy tumbling into recession late last year, which we'll talk about shortly, and Germany's economy also stumbling.
He also stressed that the ECB's policy stance is already exceptionally loose. Yeah, even at levels similar to those at the peak of the crisis. The process of normalizing the ECB policy is likely to take several years. It is all the more important not to waste time unnecessarily, he said. After all, monetary policy needs more room to react to an unexpected economic downturn in the future. These guys should be thrown in jail for what they've done, you know?
Let them write a collective memoir from behind the black jail cell poles.
Yep, I agree. But, it truly is amazing. And ladies and gentlemen, they're going to do whatever is necessary to keep this going for as long as they can. And I think we're seeing for as long as they can coming due. Because even just one wants to do this, one wants to do that, one wants to cut back, one says you can't cut back, we don't have room for this, we don't have room for that. These are all warnings to you, ladies and gentlemen. So, and then they have Italy that they have to deal with, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, as we just mentioned, Italy's fallen into its third recession in a decade. You know, slumping domestic demand has caused its economy to shrink. GDP there fell by 0.2% in the final 3 months of last year. That follows a 0.1% decline in the third quarter. And, you know, together that met the usual definition of recession, two consecutive quarters of contraction. The Eurozone as a whole expanded by 0.2%, the same pace as in the previous quarter. Now, compared with the final quarter of 2017, Eurozone GDP rose by 1.2%, its weakest 12-month performance since the 2012-13 recession that accompanied the sovereign debt crisis. Analysts expect the ECB in March to revise down its GDP forecast of 1.7% growth this year and next, and, you know, make it clear that it doesn't expect to raise interest rates until next year at the earliest. German officials have already cut their own forecast of national growth in that country from 1.8% this year to just 1%.
Well, the sad thing, Dave, is, you know, we talk about five reasons that they went back into recession. But you know what? The main reason is, you know, they never came out of any of the recessions. It was just debt that was able to keep them continuing to functioning. I mean, a year ago in December, not this past December, but this December before, I believe, I mean, we were talking about how their banks were limiting folks from withdrawing a certain amount of, they could only withdraw a certain amount of money from the banks. I think it was like, I don't know, $65 a day, $160. I don't know, it was something stupid. And so what did they do? They get a little more money, and, you know, so they clean up their act a little bit. You know, it's the old bailout system, ladies and gentlemen. Who gets to pay for it? And it never really fixes anything. You know, so now you have the world economy that's at a tipping point. We've had that somewhat recovery from the financial crisis, but only done by debt. Nothing real about it. Momentum has faded. Now you hear about China, how they're slowing, and the slowest year in 30 years, Dave. The U.S., we basically have peaked. You see the combination of political turmoil, weak international growth, worries over debt. Italy's banks have left the country's businesses on edge. Debt. Italy's government has debts of more than 130% of GDP. Threatens higher taxes on workers and businesses. You know, so that's going to destabilize these financial markets. And, you know, we don't even talk about derivatives and, you know, how the connection to derivatives is all to all of this. The banking crisis began a decade ago. But, you know, again, the lenders were never fully cleaned up. So you have a permanent crisis on your hands. Italy's eternally slow growth rate indicates that there are very fundamental problems with the structure of the economy. Yet successive governments have also struggled to make any of the necessary reforms despite constant urging from economists, including Lowe's at the European Central Bank. So it's...
Arrivederci, Italia.
You can change Italy to the U.S. Put any country in there that you want, because this is global.
Indeed. And as one falls, I'm afraid, you know, we're looking at a modern-day domino that's going to transform our economies and our lives as we know it. Well, you know, speaking of weak economies, we touched on this briefly a little bit earlier, but, you know, the largest number of Chinese public companies in a decade, Melody, expect to incur annual losses. That's because of a weak economy hitting businesses and eroding asset values there in China. A total of 395 companies listed in Shanghai and Shenzhen said they expect to record a net loss for 2018, the biggest annual tally since at least 2009. The combined losses could total between the equivalent of $43 billion and something a little bit higher. It looks like it might be over $50 billion in yuan. A year earlier, 224 companies recorded total losses of 125 billion yuan. That would be probably around 20 billion of U.S. dollars. So companies are suffering from declining revenues, higher costs, and a surge in write-downs on assets like stockpiled goods and acquired businesses. The stockpiled goods in particular is not a nice thing. In particular, a wave of takeovers and a market boom that ended in mid-2015 is causing trouble there. A lot of companies paid excessively high premiums for their takeover targets, and these assets no longer look worth that much now. Melody.
Well, you know, the companies in China are obligated to warn the market if, among other things, they expect to have an annual loss. The securities regulator also formally requires companies to decide within 3 years whether acquisitions are successful, meaning that 2015 deals are forcing accounting charges known as goodwill impairments. The economic slowdown and trade tensions with the U.S. are two certainly the main factors, but the wave of goodwill impairments also play a key role. Companies record goodwill on their balance sheets when they buy a business for more than the value of its hard assets, such as cash for factories. The buyer must estimate their fair value of reporting units annually, weighing factors such as the economic and industry outlook, and, if those figures have fallen, reduce its goodwill.
Yeah, goodwill is a fascinating accounting concept.
Yes, it is.
You know, according to Shaisheng Securities, at least 277 Chinese firms have announced goodwill write-downs worth, on average, listen to this, nearly 46% of net assets. Net, that's presumably after tax. You know, that's astounding. Analysts say they expect the final count for 2018 to be sharply higher. Many companies have opted to take one big charge now, given talk that regulators may switch to a new system for goodwill. Oh, lovely. You know, if companies were instead forced to amortize those charges or spread them over several years, that could lead to three consecutive years of losses, which under Chinese rules can lead to delisting. That's not good. An official committee on accounting standards has said that most of its members favor an amortization-based system, but it hasn't drawn any conclusions or set any target dates for changes. Wow.
So we really don't know the condition of China, do we?
I don't think anyone does.
It could not that, with the goodwill.
Yeah, it could be that, you know, the Chinese regulators do, and that's got to make them scared.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. I want to skip again. I want to go down to I just saw a partial interview with President Trump. I just saw the headlines and so forth, where Iraq President Bahram Saleh said today that President Trump did not ask Iraq's permission for U.S. troops stationed there to, quote-unquote, watch Iran. And I guess this was during the interview with Trump yesterday. He says he's not going to remove troops from Iraq because he wants to watch Iran. And this was in response to that. I'm assuming this is in response to that.
I think so.
Yeah, so speaking at the forum in Baghdad, Saleh was responding to the question about his comments. And he says, don't overburden Iraq with your own issues. Saleh said the U.S. is a major power, but do not pursue your own policy priorities. We live here. So I think that was kind of interesting, Dave, to considering. I mean, we have a pretty big base there.
Oh, indeed. You know, one thing we may not think about, we as an Americans, is what Saleh said, part of this interview, is where he said it's of fundamental interest for Iraq to have good relations with Iran and other neighboring countries. I view that as, you know, the proverbial rock and hard place conundrum. You know, I'm sure the White House is going to respond further to Salil's statement by saying, you know, the agreement they have, we have with Iraq, you know, the reference to combating terrorism includes just that, watching countries like Iran who either harbor or fund terrorists and terrorism. But military adventurism is a funny thing. You know, it seemingly allows interventionalists, the U.S. in this particular case, to broadly interpret agreements or understandings it has with countries it occupies. You know, on the other hand, it allows probably just as much leeway to the host countries in interpreting agreements, you know, that are going to be to their citizens' benefits. And I'm not quite sure why Salil took this public position that he did. That's just interesting because, you know, Iraq is still getting significant military assistance, a lesser degree of humanitarian from primarily our country, but to a lesser extent the coalition forces as well. Interesting stuff. A difficult place in the world just made, I think, all that more volatile by the Trump interview and Salil's response.
That's what I thought it was. I was surprised at that response. It just caught me, and it's like, say what?
Yeah.
But
very surprising.
Now, I'm not sure with perhaps maybe it was just something to assure Iran that, you know, they're still there to do any trading that they need to do and, you know, so forth. But we'll see what happens, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.